Jr. He wanted to stay friends with Roy, who had done so much to support him when he ran animation, and it was becoming increasingly clear that Eisner would make that difficult. Moreover, in contrast to animation, where he'd gotten along well with the animators and other executives in the division, despite his sometimes prickly and exacting nature, many people in live action seemed to resent him. Todd Garner made no secret of his disdain. Still angry over the Pearl Harbor clashes, Garner quit Disney in April, as soon as work was finished on the film, to join Roth at a new studio Roth would soon name Revolution. So did Rob Moore, the studio's chief financial officer, who had clashed with Schneider within 5 days of Schneider's arrival. Others who had stayed seemed barely to tolerate him. Bruckheimer, now Disney's most important producer, was always professional and courteous, but the bruising experience over Pearl Harbor had alienated him from Schneider, and he treated him like a transitory studio executive who would be gone long before Bruckheimer stopped making films for Disney. It hadn't helped Schneider's popularity that he'd been forced to fire staff members. Even though he'd taken live action from a loss to a profit of $350 million in a year, he wasn't enjoying himself. Schneider's plan was to wait until Pearl Harbor opened on Memorial Day weekend 2001, then announce his resignation in the wake of what he expected to be a huge hit. And he wasn't the only Disney executive confident about Pearl Harbor. Audience surveys at preview screenings were positive. Awareness of the film among potential ticket buyers was a remarkable 92%, higher than for any other film scheduled for release that summer. Despite taking back his prediction that Pearl Harbor was a sure thing in his annual letter to shareholders, Eisner couldn't restrain himself, in part because he was so eager for a hit. The week before Pearl Harbor opened, he sent an email to all Disney cast members. "There are no sure things in the entertainment industry, but this comes close. It better, because I've already predicted this in the annual report letter I wrote in December. And I've been on CNBC and CNN in the last 2 weeks, proclaiming it a smash. I've been telling everyone who would listen that this will be our biggest live-action film ever." With Eisner's credibility on the line, little was left to chance. Synergy was squeezed from Disney's assets. ABC ran a one-hour special hosted by David Brinkley. Good Morning America featured the movie every day for a week, with co-host Diane Sawyer calling it the movie event of the summer, and reporter Jack Ford hailing it as the biggest summer blockbuster of all time before the film opened. The History Channel, co-owned by Disney with Hearst and General Electric, obligingly ran 3 Pearl Harbor episodes, as well as a History versus Hollywood segment that focused on the film. The E! Channel, also co-owned by Disney, lavished coverage on the film. Was the opening of a $140 million Disney movie legitimate news? As Frank Rich noted in the New York Times, the 50th anniversary of Pearl Harbor 10 years earlier received little coverage. But it's hard to fault Disney and ABC for blurring the lines when its rivals were doing the same. NBC ran a 2-hour National Geographic special hosted by Tom Brokaw on Pearl Harbor to coincide with the film's opening. And MSNBC ran a special about the making of the movie that could have been produced by Disney Public Relations. Newsweek did a 12-page cover story.